It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. It is December, and I'm looking at my partner, Captain Mike Ward. Good morning.
Good morning, Sean. I just got here, and boy, I came in just late, just at the last minute. And me and you haven't had a chance to talk at all.
It's going
to
be fun.
And you've been in Pennsylvania hunting, and you sent me a picture of a deer that you killed, but we have not talked at all.
No discussion.
Texted, and I said, congratulations, and that's about it.
Yep.
So
we'll pick it up. Coming up on today's show, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Big thank you to them. Coming up on today's show, things not to do with your rifle. Here's some notes I made. Things not to do with your rifle. The secondary rut. Second rut. And also some money that the National Wild Turkey Federation has allocated to the state of Alabama. Pretty big story here. Some projects they're working on. So that's all on the way on today's show. And, yeah, we'll talk about the little fishing part of it is the fish don't know what the heck is going on. And when we say fish, we're talking about speckled trout in the Delta, speckled trout in the dead-end rivers, Dog River, Fowl River, Fish River, places like that. They were all, in the reports I was getting from our buddy Captain Bobby Abrascato, even while I was gone, is had banned the cold is coming because it was cold when I left for Pennsylvania. It was cold, and it was cold up there too. It was awesome. When we left, it was getting cold, and that pushed those fish, those trout, from the flats into the river channels, which you and I like to call the do nothing drift. Which
can't
Captain Bobby
be
has
any
some
better than
he
that.
Has some fancy name for it because he's like, I'm a guide. I got to be doing something, but. He said that they have pulled back out. So if you're listening to us this morning, heading out, he said they have a lot of them have pulled out of those river channels onto the adjacent flats. So if you're catching them, in a do-nothing drift in like the Tensaw River or something like that, then they've moved. There's still some there, but a lot of them are on the edge where that goes to the flat. Maybe not way up on the flat, but close to the edge.
Yeah.
He catching them on corks, he was.
I've got a couple friends that's been fishing over there, and that's what they told me too. They said they caught a few in the river. But most of them have moved back out, and they're up on the flats, up in that 3 to 5 foot of water.
Probably just the first place they come to find bait when they get out of the river channel. They probably followed the bait right to that point. That's the other thing. We always talk about we'll get, of course, Captain Bobby back on, but we all talk about where the fish are going. The fish, they're doing what the bait is doing. They're not going there. They're following. They're going to where there's groceries.
That's right.
So the bait does these things, and the fish follow. The fish don't make their own decision. The bait makes the decision. And then the fish follow.
That's right. And this is the first year in a while, Sean, that, the rivers have gotten right.
No joke.
I mean, the fish are there. They're catching them. And
we've been wiped out by December two of the last 3 years, I think.
3 to 4 years.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years.
It's been awful on the causeway trying to go catch fish. But right now, it's right.
Yep.
You can go catch fish on the causeway. This is back at, like, the old days right now.
Yeah, because enjoy it, because at any point...
we're gonna have
5 inches of rain in North Alabama, and it can flood those rivers.
We're gonna have some monsoon sooner or later, but until then,
enjoy.
And if we get a good cold front or two come through and push those specks back in the river,
in the river channel,
right? In the river channel, that's right.
But right now, you still get after them on the flat. So get out and enjoy that. We talk about we'll get Captain Bobby back in before Christmas to talk about some of this wintertime fishing now going forward that stays so good. All right. So when last we talked about you and I both spent some, I spent time there. You spent time on the road. You went to Kansas. I went to Pennsylvania.
Right.
And, went up for something we've done a couple times going up. I actually used to do it when I was young, but life and children responsibilities gave me about a 20-year break where I didn't go, but I'm back over the last 4 or 5 years to going up to South Central Pennsylvania, where my mom's family's from.
That's your mom's farm up there, your family's farm.
Mm-hmm. So going up there and hunting what is their rifle season that starts the day after it starts Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Right.
Used to start the Monday after Thanksgiving, but things have changed over time. So it's now get started the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And now Pennsylvania is one of those states. I think we've had a discussion before that you couldn't hunt on Sunday. Season would open, but every once a week that day was out.
Right.
You could not hunt. You could hunt crows and coyotes or something, but you could not hunt deer, you cannot hunt turkey.
Every state
can't hunt
is
bear.
Different.
Yeah,
you know?
And Pennsylvania's got a very long heritage of that. I mean, people say, you know, how much does a church control a state? Y'all ain't seen nothing until you get to Pennsylvania. A lot has changed, though. But now, over the last 3 years or so, Pennsylvania Game Commission has gone to where you can now hunt 3 Sundays during the season. That season being, there's a Sunday during bow season, right there around the rut, that you can hunt. Yeah. There's one during bear season proper, that like mid-November, that you can hunt the Sunday, and the Sunday that is the day after opening day for their gun season.
And that's it.
So, yeah, that's it. They're working. Maybe there is one more during their flintlock season. They have a true, not muzzleloader, flintlock season in January. That's the boom.
Boom.
I mean, the delay thing. So they got, not talking about those muzzle. We're not talking about the 200-yard shooting machines now. We're talking about the flintlock. So we went up there for the rifle season opener and, had a good trip. Weather was there. You know, it was funny when we left before the plane debacle trying to get home. But before we left, I said, we finally hit something right. And it's been cold the last couple times we've gone. But you know how on a hunting trip, you're always like, they say, you should have gotten here last week. It was good and cold. Or as you leave, here comes the cold front. Well, we actually hit it correctly. So that was good.
Now, you know, I always hear about Pennsylvania, opening day of deer season, gun season.
Yes.
There's a million and something people hunting in Pennsylvania.
That's a real number. He's not just saying,
There's a million, five, or three, or whatever. There's over a million people
the most
with
hunters
guns in their hand gun hunting.
Yep.
Tell me what it sounded like up there.
You know what? And in recent years, it doesn't sound like it used to. It used to sound, in the valley where my family's from, it used to sound like a dove shoot to some degree. But what has changed over time, about 18 years ago, Pennsylvania put in a 3 points to a side where we are. And at a couple areas in west of us, it's 4 points to a side rule.
Right.
And that has slowed things down.
Yeah.
And so still plenty of
shooting heads and spikes and 3 points. And so,
because it used to be just, it was warfare. Yeah. But it's still, there was still a lot of shooting, but not, it really wasn't what it was in the past. We commented on that. I think, the opening morning, I heard 10 shots.
Yeah.
Then that afternoon, heard maybe 14 shots or something.
That's not bad at all.
It's not bad. Not bad. So it wasn't, but there are a bunch of people that are they're in the woods. There's lots of private where we are. If I'd have been closer up the valley, we call it, then closer to the public, probably would have heard more. But it was a little slow, but still plenty of shooting.
Yeah.
We had the weather. I think our high until like the last day we're there was 38, 39.
Man.
And it wasn't super cold, not 28 to 38, kind of cloudy, but spitting snow. I always loved to hunt in the snow.
Sure.
Got some snow. We saw a lot of deer. But just a lot of deer.
Yeah.
Maybe not the number of bucks we've seen, not the number of rack bucks we've seen in the past, but a lot of deer. Because it's still, there's not the doe shooting that goes on here, that goes on up there. Even though they're trying up there, I think you can get as many as 7 doe tags up there now, which is a big deal. It used to be you get 1.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So they're trying. But, you'd see, in an evening sit, you'd have, I had 31 deer in front of me and maybe 4 were bucks. We're rack bucks.
Yeah.
There might have been buttonhead spikes and all that, but a good number of deer.
Sure. That's a lot of deer.
Yeah.
Now,
and then the next guy together we'd see, had 3 guys sitting out. So together we might see 65 or 70 in an evening between the 3 guys on stand.
Yeah. That's a lot of deer.
Yeah.
A lot of deer. Now, how long is their gun season up there?
It's 2 weeks, but there's all kind of stuff that if I don't open their website, I can't tell you everything accurately. But the bow season starts beginning of October. It goes through the rut and all that, and then closes down for a week or two, and they have the bear season, and then opens up. The main meat of rifle season is like 12 to 14 days.
Yeah.
It's like this first, what I was hunting the beginning of that, and this next week coming.
Well, it's always.
And then there's a muzzleloader, and then there's like a flintlock.
It's always interesting hearing about other states the way they hunt. Because people that don't go out of Alabama, they think, the season comes in October and you hunt to February.
Right.
No problem. And hunt 7 days a week, no problem. But all states are different.
Yes. You know? Yeah, and it is. And they are changing. Pennsylvania's changed a bunch since I was a boy. But yeah, here's, let me pull this up here. So, because I really just focused on what we were hunting, you know, for the opening of rifle season. But yeah, so bow hunting starts October 2nd, goes through November 13th, but not everywhere in the state. That's another thing, too. They divvy up, you have WMUs, wildlife management units.
Right.
Like we're in 4A, but you might be in 5C or something like that. So the rules would be a little bit different. The muzzleloader season is October 16th through 23rd. And then, let's see, firearm this year, yeah, November 27th opened and goes through December 11th. So there you go.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah, so that's, and then flintlock comes in December 27th. But yeah, so there, and we just had a buck tag. You could apply for a doe tag, but be frank, because we got to move the meat back. We're not, you know, shooting does. I think we got to, the group wants us to drive next year so we can go, go shoot does. Because the does, man, we got does that are 150.
Yeah.
You know, or better.
Well, you got the northern deer, which are big.
They're big. And I should have taken pictures skinning the buck the other night. The hair, and I'm showing Mike, I don't know what that is, but the hair on that buck was that?
About 3.5 inches?
About, from the skin up when you're looking at it. It's just a, they're different. Okay, we didn't carcass the deer we killed. We wanted to get the ribs and stuff off them, so we broke the sternum. You know, usually you can take a good skinning knife, heavy duty, and come down and break the sternum, come through the gut to get the ribs open, right? Had to take a hammer with the knife and beat on the back of this knife to break through the sternum. They're just bigger deer. We'll talk about that when we come back. Also, that secondary rut, and talk about what's happening around here when we continue on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. Plus, Mike and I were talking about not getting deer reports, Benny. I missed duck season opening. Of course, today it's back in, but I missed opening day to travel up the hill and through the woods.
Yeah.
To go do that. I do. So I had. If you got some good duck reports, or you got bad duck reports, which is probably more normal, go ahead and lay them on us. At the Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Make sure to put outdoors on there to get to that page. Which, by the way, a story up there, and I'll tell this on the front side, and then we can talk more, give you a quick run through the hunt. But story we posted here from Pennsylvania. Headline is, Hunter shoots first buck only to watch four bears start eating it. Clearfield County, Pennsylvania. A woman in Pennsylvania had this experience with four bears. Jordan Zabinski went hunting for her first time ever over Thanksgiving weekend and shot her first buck. She said, I was so terrified of a bear, and my husband was like, I've never seen a bear except for this one time here. Don't worry, you're not going to see one, Zabinski said. Right after she knocked down her buck, she found she wasn't alone. I hear, like, crunching, and I'm like, oh, there's a deer, she said. But it wasn't another deer. She was staring at four black bears. After multiple unanswered texts and calls to her husband, who was helping her brother load a deer that he had killed, she started to worry. Said at first it was really quiet, but then I started to really freak out. After getting hold of her husband, she said she had to wait about 30 minutes more and also try to keep as quiet as possible. Said, it's been a while now and no one's coming. What if they don't come get me, she worried. Once her husband and brother arrived, they scared the bears away and recovered the deer carcass, which was only missing the tail. While terrifying, Jordan said she'll carry what she learned from the experience with her moving forward. She even went hunting again the following day. Now I just know if I can just yell, they'll run away, because that's all they did, just come up and yell. So, of course, I didn't have that luck. I had that bear tag burn a hole in my pocket, and my bears had all disappeared. So,
and you did have some bear on your property. You had pictures of them.
Yeah, we have. And here's the thing, though. When the corn gets cut, and this is just, too much inside Pennsylvania stuff. We'll get to Alabama stuff in a second. But where I'm from, we're all – mostly dairy cattle, and then it's corn and alfalfa, and some soybeans, you know, some brome. And so when they harvest the corn, whoever hasn't harvested the corn, it's like a chess game. The bears all move over to where there's corn.
Sure.
So we were clean. Our folks at Farm Our Ground had it clean as a whistle by the time we showed up. So the deer are still there, but the bears, I cut one bear, old bear track and scat, and, you know, that was it. So they'd moved on to somebody who still had corn standing. Which is not far from us. I mean, I could look at it, but that's.
You think a group of deer can mess up a farm, mess up a crop? Can you imagine what a bear can do?
You and talked
hogs.
About
you know, my, hogs do too. But
thank God we don't have those in there. But you talked to my kinfolk. You want to talk about somebody who wants some black bears dead?
Yeah.
Folks at farm up there. But yeah, didn't get that. But you got killed a couple bucks. A really good buck for me.
Right.
So you know, one of my better bucks, and it was really cool because we saw it 2 years ago. But this is something we see in Alabama, but it's happening in Pennsylvania too. We're on a second rut,
yeah.
Which most states don't let you, let's say a lot of states don't let you hunt with a gun during the rut. We just
that's
got
right.
done talking Kansas.
After the rut, gun season opens.
Right.
That's right.
So when the bucks are at their most stupid, you're not gun hunting.
Right.
Well, what's happening in Pennsylvania is the same thing is true, that when they rut in Pennsylvania like they do in Illinois or Kansas, it's that October 30th through November 14th window. When that's going on, that rut, it's bow hunting only.
Yeah.
Up there. But what's happening is you're getting – and one of the things, too, that's happening, I think it's because of CWD. The CWD zone, and people aren't wanting to shoot as many deer and eat them or whatever. The doe numbers have gotten very high.
Yeah.
Very high. And I think you have two things. You have yearling does that may not have been ready a month before that then come in a month later. And you have – I was watching a full-grown doe getting run. So we had a whole second rut. Now, it's interesting. You have a field full of does. 80% of them paid the bucks no mind.
Right.
But there are a couple that were in, come running in with their mouths hanging open, tongue hanging out, and we're running. And so we had a rut.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of cool. Actually, we debated which is better, because if you have this rut, and we talked to Casey Shootman about that some too, about, you know, finding the time when you don't have all the does in, you just have a few of them.
Right.
And that was kind of what we saw. So the does that were in were getting chased hard, and multiple bucks. You know, it wasn't just a buck with a doe. It was
multiple.
Four
right.
bucks,
and
five
that's
bucks.
What happens, yeah, because it's just very few does that come in heat.
Right.
And the ones that are in heat, I mean, all the bucks are after them.
All of them.
You know, because
they got nowhere else to go.
Well,
yeah.
In the first rut, I mean, there's a bunch of them come in.
Right.
So, I mean, usually it's just one buck, one doe,
right.
Or it might be two bucks or something. But when
this
it comes to the second rut, you just have a few does come in and all the bucks around, they still ready.
If you're in the right place, it's
that's
great.
Right.
So, yeah, we. That worked for us. So, so it was good. We killed two deer while we were up there, and saw a bunch of smaller bucks, but nothing really bigger. You know, so it was a.
It's always experience and a lot of fun.
It's fun.
To go away, do a trip off somewhere, especially on your own property.
Yeah,
too.
And I don't exactly. I'm not going to. People were like, I put some pictures on Instagram. People were asking. It's not a guide service. I'm not. You know, it's family land. And it's, you know, it is what it is. It's not a managed property other than just keeping, you know, poachers off. There's not much of a managed property system, but it produces some good deer once in a while. And those jokers, you know, you've hunted so many northern deer, Saskatchewan deer. They're just a different critter. When you go
totally
to try to
different.
When you pull them up on a gambrel and start, I mean, the backstraps off my buck were, I don't know, how long is this right here? I mean, they 2.5 feet long or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just bigger.
They're just big northern animals.
Yeah.
Northern deer. You know, and in Kansas, you know, my buddy killed that deer, and they like 300, maybe 320.
Right.
Somewhere around in there.
Just way bigger.
Just monster deer. Like,
Their hair, like we talked about, even their hair's thicker. Their sternums are thicker.
Everything.
Know.
Yeah. When I had a big buck contest one time, you know, I had some people bring in some deer that
did you say know, this they, year, what part of Alabama is this one from?
Yeah, and you could look at the hair and see it was like 3 inches long compared to ours at about an inch long.
That's right,
or less maybe.
Right,
and anyway, I had to disqualify them.
See,
so there is a big difference. I don't know why they thought they could get by with it.
Like you hadn't seen a deer before.
Yeah. People will cheat.
Yes. But, yeah, all in all, a good trip. I got comedic trying to get home. But I will say this. One part, I told it on Midday Mobile this week on yesterday's show, but you ever feel like you get typecasted? We showed up in Pennsylvania there, and we were supposed to have a Buick Verano, was a vehicle. Now, it's still ridiculous with all the gear, but trying to save money on the rental car and to drive up to the farm. They didn't have the Buick. She said, well, we don't have the Buick Verano. She's looking at my license. That's Alabama. She said, we got a car for y'all, or you guys, or whatever, and go out there. Remember what the Duke boys drove?
Yeah.
They drove a bright orange Dodge Charger.
Yeah.
We drove a bright orange Dodge Charger. It's with the with all our hunting gear. We're in a sports car. I knocked my head about 15 times getting in and out But that's what we had. That was our transport. Now we get to the farm. We got pickup and all that there. But, yeah, that's what we drove. So I felt like I was typecasted that they put the Alabama boys. We got the car for y'all. Here's a bright orange Dodge Charger. And I just started saying, well, good old boys.
I don't know how you're going to get your gear in that, really.
You should have seen it.
Yeah.
It was some technique to get
talking
it on.
Talking about Dodge Charger, I was on the way up to the camp last Friday night. And I got almost to the camp, and there was a car on the side of the road in flames.
What?
Yeah, and it was a Dodge Charger.
and
it was a guy and two kids that, I mean, I was the first one to come through.
What happened?
Yeah, he said he was driving down the road, and all of a sudden there was smoke coming out of his hood. So he pulled off the side of the road, and when he lifted the hood up, the whole front, the engine and everything just busted out in flames. And then he just grabbed, he was going hunting. And grabbed all his guns out and his kids out and his clothes out, everything he could get out. And when I came by, I mean, it was torched. And then went by the next day. I mean, it was nothing. I mean, it was just the frame there. Everything else, it was just
the old
gone.
Dodge burner there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at least you didn't burn up in your Dodge Charger.
Well, that's true. We can look at the positive on that.
Yeah.
So there's a little recap. It was good. And it seems like I was in the right place because you and I were talking. I hadn't heard a bunch of great reports.
I have not. I haven't heard of many deer being killed. Maybe they have. Maybe I haven't heard of them, Sean. And I see them on Facebook, you know, right, just like everybody else does. But most of those people that I see on there, they're not people I know. You know?
Yeah.
What is it, Alabama Deer?
I don't know. You follow
that? Whatever it is that I follow. But anyway, there have been some nice deer killed. But
no, earlier, yeah, we talked about like elsewhere in the state, like that 194. Four up at Bankhead.
Right.
And if you go look at Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries page, there's been lots of good bucks coming through on their public land.
Right.
But it's but here's the thing. We're kind of in the doldrums.
Yeah.
Yeah. You and I and Jay Craddock talked about this on the show, you know, this period of time. And he watches it, number one, as a hunter. Number two is running Skinner's Wild Game Process. And that's how we get our information. We see what shows up at the processor.
We know when the rut's on. Mm-hmm. We talk to Jay all the time. When those bucks start hitting the ground and they start coming to the processing up in Thomasville,
you know
it's happening.
So what do you do? What do you do right now? You know, what do you do right now? Because it is the doldrums, but we talk about it. There's people killed some good deer during the doldrums.
Oh, they do. Absolutely. You go hunting as much as you can, period.
Right.
Because you never know when one's going to step out. Now, on my place, I had about four, maybe five decent little 8 points, mm-hmm. 8 points, you know, nothing big, just decent 8 points, and one that I would have mm-hmm. let Dylan shoot, or my grandson would have shot, you know. And in the past 3 weeks, I have not seen one of those on the camera. They're gone. Hogs, I mean, I had tons of hogs. They're all gone.
Acres.
I had one
acres
big,
dried up.
Well, I think what happened is my neighbor across the street's got about 100 acres of real big, pretty hardwoods.
Mm-hmm.
And undoubtedly, I haven't talked to him. I hope I see him this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet you he's got a big acorn crop over there. And I bet you he's got all the hogs. And I bet he's got a lot of the deer over there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll talk to him this weekend, and I'll see if the acorns are dropping over there. But that, I have seen that in the past happen, where the acorns get dropping real hard on him, and a lot of my game leaves.
And it takes, and we'll talk about this some more, but maybe people who are new to it are going to realize something with baiting and corn.
Oh, yes.
Baiting and corn's one thing, but when acorns are falling, deer will go eat acorns instead of
all day long.
All right, be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. During the break, talking acorns.
Yeah.
The tough thing is, though, there's still probably the good bucks, the older bucks, that thing that happens to them when they're probably around 3.5, 4, has them using those acorn flats at night.
Sure.
They're
probably not out in the daytime.
So,
and in the rut, be a different deal.
Yeah. So, and hunting them, you know, this time of year, that getting thick thing is, it's hard. Big buck stands for me. I hunt them because I know I need to, but they're not fun to me because I like to see.
Yeah.
I like to see, and But it seems like the places I've seen them this time of year is a dang thicket. And they'll get up and move a little bit inside that thicket during the day.
That's right. You know, if you can keep a place really quiet,
mm-hmm.
and we keep our place pretty quiet. We just go straight into the shoot. We only hunting house because I got my grandson.
Mm-hmm.
He's 15 years old, so he's getting ready to start shooting a bow because
mm-hmm.
he's going to Kansas with me and going out there with a bow. So he's getting ready to start doing that. So I'm going to start putting him in the woods,
right?
You know, and let him bow hunt some. But right now, we just go straight to the shooting house, sneak in best we can, sneak out, try not to make any noise. And I'm on a bad boy buggy, not making any noise. And my roads are good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're grass most of it. And so I just ease in and ease out. So I don't disturb a whole lot while I'm there. There hadn't been any shooting on
right.
my place. So, you know, we keep it pretty quiet. So you never know when one might walk out.
Right.
You never know.
But they, it's tough, though.
It is.
Yeah, it's tough. It's funny talking about keeping, you know, I keep a pretty quiet place myself, and I still have, I have plenty of bucks on daytime, but, I mean, it's still, in the areas where nobody goes in on my place.
Yeah.
It's still 1:34 a.m., you know.
Yeah, well, that's normal. They're nocturnal.
Yes. They're supposed to be corpuscular. They're supposed to be corpuscular.
Yeah.
Daylight and dusk, but.
Yeah.
In Mobile County, son, that means nocturnal. That's what that means.
But it still doesn't matter. You hunt as much as you can when you can. You know, hunt in the morning when you can, hunt in the evening when you can, strictly when the wind's right. You never know when that big one's going to step out. Even in December, when we call it the December doldrums,
mm-hmm.
every year I have friends kill great big bucks.
Yep.
This, you know, just some they've never seen before, or they knew they were there but hadn't seen them all year or something. They just happened to step out.
Yeah.
So you just got to go.
And that's the other, that's one thing. You know, we talk about how cameras keep you in the woods longer because you know this buck is there or whatever, keeps you hunting longer. But it also, I think, is a double-edged sword that people, because that buck didn't walk in front. We got this idea that every dang buck is going to walk in front of the camera and pose.
Yep.
And they don't. I got a buck that I think is our biggest buck, but I have late August, early September, I have one picture of half of his rack. It's big. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's there, but he ain't walking in front of cameras.
Yeah.
But you get this idea if you don't have, I don't have any big ones
and
there.
And you're right about that because I haven't seen anything in 3 weeks. And when we hunted this weekend, it was like, I don't even care about going, you know.
Right.
Taking Dylan, let him,
right.
you know, but, you know, we didn't see anything.
But you might be psyching yourself out because there may be a great
double-edged swords,
yep.
like you say. I mean, you get that big one or two or three on camera, and, boy, that psychs you out, and you want to go all the time, you know. But then the other end of it is you're not seeing anything. It gets you depressed where you really don't care about going. You may not stay till 8 o'clock in the morning where you normally stay to 9:30, 10 o'clock or something, you know. So it is a double-edged sword on that now. So
and we all have, and I'm telling this to myself at the same time I'm saying to everybody,
we psych ourselves out.
Yeah, you get this. I mean, it's like a good friend of mine, you know him well, hunts with, he is nowhere near as interested in the cameras as I am.
Yeah.
He's going to just hunt.
Right.
And there's something to be said for that.
There just, is,
you know,
Sean.
Have a good place, you know, that, you know, but I mean, I'm into it because what I'm trying to do is figure out, so when I do see that buck, I know, is he old enough? Is he, you know, you know, that I can recognize him fast. But, when they, you know, you get this idea, I've got, you know, these bucks are real big that I got like one half picture of and one picture of another. Hadn't seen them in a while. So what do I assume? They're gone.
Yeah.
They may not be gone. They may just, I mean, the picture is only taken the slightest part of your lease or your property. And you get this idea there's nothing there because they didn't stand in front of the camera.
You're a little different. You ride around on your property every 2 minutes, you're saying, smile at that camera.
I got some cameras.
Hey, smile at that camera.
I got some cameras. Which, by the way, maybe we'll do that before Christmas. It's a great gift idea. People listening, maybe buy for yourself or buy for others. We can review some of the cameras out there.
Tell me one thing about your cameras.
Okay.
I was thinking about this the other day. Have you got one main camera that all your other cameras mm-hmm. send pictures to, or do you have a couple of those? Or
no, I just have on that, and it's
tell
funny
me how that works.
And I just hauled some more back from Pennsylvania, and I'm up since October. You talk about e-scouting when you're sitting in Mobile and you got pictures coming in from South Central Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But I'm running two kinds. My bulk of mine are the Cuddy Link system.
Yeah.
Okay. there's a main send camera. The others, though, don't all have to. They don't have to get to that camera directly. They can get to it. I have them strung out. So if camera 16 is your farthest camera,
right?
Because you can have 16 with Cutting Link. It may be nowhere near the main camera, but it's near 15, which is near enough to 14, which is near enough to 13, to 12.
So
it'll
send it on down.
Yeah,
I did not know that. That's one of the things I was interested in knowing, because if you got that your camera strung out so far away, would it send a signal to your main camera?
Yeah.
And if it is too far away, it won't, is
correct.
What you're telling me.
Correct.
So
and
what is the distance there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it depends.
It depends on
terrain.
On the signal.
Yeah.
Terrain,
I got
signal.
Some that are, you know, real good because they're up on top of a ridge on a cleared power line. And I got some that are in the bottom that I got to have a dang camera a few hundred yards away, you know, to just get the signal out of there.
Yeah.
You just have to play with it. You'll get the systems and, you know, you set it up. And then what I do is I'll take, like, okay, set up the main camera. And then set up camera one. Okay, turn on camera two, get a signal, it'll be 99 or 100%, and then walk with that sucker. How far can you go before you start getting down to, and I run the ragged edge, and when the humidity's up or down, I start losing cameras, but they come back because I'm running them as far as I can.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to get to all these different places. But you start walking with it. Until it starts getting down the 20-something percent range, and then that's where they say, yeah, it's kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
And then you figure out, okay, where in there do you want that camera? You know, you have a place in mind. You walked there from camera one with camera two till you go, man, I can't make it there.
You gotta
so
put
is
one
there
in between.
In between. And so I have some. That's the thing. When you say, oh, I got 16 cameras. They're not always in a perfect place because sometimes I put a camera in between in the best area I can find. But it's really a bridge to get me to camera three is going to be on the place I really want to see.
Do they not have some other type of repeaters that you can buy, just a repeater
you can
or something?
You can put antennas on them, you know, to get better signal.
On the camera.
On the camera. Although I don't know. I got to see what Cutting Link does. I also run spy points, which are spy points are their own deal. They're cellular cameras, but they're one at a time. You know what I'm saying? That camera sends the cell. It doesn't have to network back to the other one.
Okay, it just sends that picture to you.
Correct.
Okay.
So anywhere you can get a signal on that camera, a cell signal, you can get a picture. You don't have to be close enough to another camera to get back to a main one. But I can put a Cutting Link camera in a place where I can't get a signal. As long as the main one can get a signal and it can transmit through the other ones, I can get a signal out.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Like, if you're standing in a place you have no bars, no cellular bars, you couldn't use a spy point. And there's booster antennas, and I run on those as well.
Yeah.
But with a regular antenna, if you can't get a good enough signal, you get a signal, but not good enough to send pictures, you can't use one there.
Right.
But if you had a Cutting Link and you had a place where your main camera sits that can get a cellular signal, and you've daisy chained it between the other cameras far enough to make one talk to the other, then you can get a signal there.
Okay. So on a normal, if you've got a flat terrain, John, you
quarter mile.
Okay,
but you got real thick stuff and might be an eighth, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
And if there's a ridge, it's not going to go through a ridge.
Yeah.
So, you know, say you had ridges and bottoms, you might have to have a camera on each ridge that's talking to the one in the bottom.
Yeah.
Like say the two cameras, like you have one, two, and three. Camera one is on a ridge, camera three is on a ridge, camera two is in a bottom.
Right.
Camera one and camera three may be too far away to talk. And camera two, they're getting a signal to each other. So camera three from this ridge over here, now you could, if they were close, camera one and camera three could talk. But in this scenario, camera one talks to camera two talks to camera three.
I got you.
Camera three's picture's taken, it goes to two, goes to one, goes to you.
Yeah.
So. That's how they work.
Well, that's pretty
neat.
And
sometimes they find – sometimes if you, we're getting so complex, but sometimes you'll have them strung out, but a camera
people don't know.
Right.
I mean, you would think that I know, but you're the only one I know that's doing that, you know, using those.
Yeah.
So
that's Cutting Link. And so Cutting Link – Link is in the name.
Yeah.
So they're linking cameras together. You got one sender camera. You got one main one, and then you have – the drones, you could call them, that communicate with each other back to the main one. SpyPoint, and there's a bunch of other manufacturers. These are just the two I use. Spy Point is its own thing.
Yeah.
It either it gets a signal cellular or it doesn't. It's right. Not going to link to another Spy Point camera.
Now,
so I use those in places, other kind of places. So
now, is Cuddy the only one that has the link?
No, I think Moultrie's doing their own, and no, there's several manufacturers that are doing their own kind of link system. The Primos is a Moultrie, I think, that does that.
So you got to have a phone. You got to buy.
Package
from the phone company.
No, not from the phone company. You buy it from, so you set either of these up and you pay a subscription. I pay a subscription. She's not listening right now, right? No, the wife's not listening. I pay a subscription to Cuddy Link for one main send, and then for the Spy Points, each additional camera. Plus, we got to talk about this money too from the Turkey Federation. Okay. It's all coming up next. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Let me just say this quickly here, and then we'll get to some more quick camera talk. But Alabama chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation recently allocated $122,000 in Hunting Heritage Superfunds for wild turkey projects here in Alabama. Of that total, $60,676 was donated to the Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries Division and to the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources to fund projects including wildlife habitat management and the publication of the annual Wild Turkey Report, Full Fans and Sharp Spurs, that if you've never seen that before, you ought to. Great publication. Shows awesome. Lots of pictures and all the gobbling counts and all that stuff in there. It said approximately $61,000 was approved for other projects statewide, including funding to improve wild turkey habitat on public lands, as well as help launch outdoor education programs in schools. This funding supports the enhancement of turkey habitat, increases hunting access opportunities, and funds educational programs, and is an excellent fit for the National Wild Turkeys Federation's Save the Habitat, Save the Hunt initiative. So, and there's a lot more to this. You can go look at it on the Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries Facebook page, and I'll put it up on ours as well. But good story, and just more of why, you know, Mike and I are such big fans of the National Wild Turkey Federation.
That's right. I mean, a lot of that money that we spend at the banquets and stuff stay here in Alabama.
Doing stuff for hunters in Alabama. So
that's
it really is. We've said it before, even if you're not a turkey hunter, Turkey Federation's doing good work in our state.
You know, especially out west, where there didn't used to be any turkeys.
Right.
There was no turkeys in a lot of places, a lot of states out west, and they've introduced them, and they've just thrived unbelievably. They've got better turkeys out there than we do here.
Yep.
I mean, and we used to be the best around here, but, man, they have thrived out west. So if it wasn't for the National Wild Turkey Federation doing that, you may not have any turkeys out west.
So keep them in your mind. If you don't have a membership, you need to get one. All right, so we talked, which, by the way, side note, on my cell cameras, too.
Yeah.
If there's landowners listening, it's about the best way to see how many loads get hauled off your place and what's on there.
Timber.
Yep.
Yes.
If they're logging on your place and X number of loads go out, you got pictures of those, position them on your roads.
Yep.
If you want to see what compiles, you know, if they say, hey, we're hauling pulp, and all of a sudden you say, that sure looks like chipping saw, or that looks like logs.
Yep.
Just saying. Just think about that.
The camera can be used for a lot of great things.
We use it for security.
Yeah.
Right. We use it for security.
Yep.
We use it for that. But, yeah, and you and I were talking about just the different – I use to – if you're just joining us, I'm using Cuddy Link, and I have some spy points.
Yeah.
They got those spy points down to 100. You can buy them under $140 when they got the sale going on. Maybe $129.99, or I'm somewhere close.
But do you have to buy service for
each one
of those?
So with spy point, you have to buy service for each one.
Okay.
But you know what? If how about this? If you hunt, let's say you have multiple properties. You know, you got an 80 over here, and you got a 120 over there, and you got a 60. You get to hunt over here, or whatever.
Yeah.
You put that. You could have a spy point on each one.
You just have to pay service. And what's the service a month?
There's, of course.
Oh, yeah. Mike, there's different plans.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think the cheap one's like $10. The unlimited's like $20-something, $29, $30, something like that. So, I wish I had come up with this. But so, the benefit of the Cuddy Link is you're paying one fee.
One fee, and you might have.
And you can have up
15
to 16. You can have
16.
That one. Yeah, the main camera plus 15. 16 total.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got 15, I guarantee.
I got 16.
16, yeah.
Yeah. And okay. I may be adding a new main camera and a new bunch of them soon.
Yeah. But that's a great way to, like you say, you use it up in
Pennsylvania. Those were the spy points then.
Right.
Because I didn't have a network. But I took them up because I was up for that thing we do with the radio station, the immigration conference thing in Washington. When all the other radio people then went and did political things after that week, I drove up to Pennsylvania and hung cameras.
Yeah.
And I've been watching those.
They were all out partying, having a good time.
I was hanging cameras in the woods up on the mountain.
That's John Sullivan.
I was up on the mountain hanging cameras.
You remind me of me.
That's why we get along. But as you're looking, I would say, and if somebody wants to have a discussion about this, it's great because I just know what I know. I don't know what things I might be missing. But if I was looking for, and it's substantial, you're looking at introductory into CuddyLink. $750, which gives you the main camera, and I think it's two or maybe it's three, what we'll call the additional or the drone cameras. They're not drone like flying around, meaning that they report back to the main.
So basically $200 a piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that'll get you started. Of course, it's just like, you know, that'll get you addicted, and then you'll buy more of those things. And but they're good. Some people don't. People don't want to run cameras, but it gives me a peace of mind for security in addition to, you know, keeping an idea of what you got. So when that buck steps out, I say, okay, I know that's that deer that is 5-year-old or that's a 3-year-old. Do not shoot him. You know?
That's right. I mean, it does help you identify what's on your property, the shooters and the non-shooters, and you can show somebody now, if this deer comes out in the field, please do not shoot it.
Right.
Of course, sometimes that works, sometimes it don't. I had one last year. I showed him that picture. I said, whatever you do, When that deer comes out here, don't shoot that. Well, as soon as he walked out, he was chasing a doe. Oh, he was a big one, you know.
Yeah.
He whopped him.
Well, but that's
that's okay.
But if you're going to get into management, though, and this is, listen, I am no pro on this. I've been just trying to get better at this.
Yeah.
That on our place, there are deer that have bigger racks that are younger that won't get shot, and there's deer that will get shot that have smaller racks in them because they're old.
6 years old.
Yeah. I have not graduated. I like to do management. I still have not graduated to the point where I don't like to kill a buck. I still like to kill a buck.
Sure.
So if there's a 6.5-year-old like we got that, you know, is just not going to do anything more, deer's 6.5 and I've, you know, looked at it, then you get to shoot that buck. But that buck that may have a bigger rack that's 3.5, I don't shoot that buck. That doesn't mean for anybody else what they need to do, but that's just me.
You know, I'm thinking back right now to when I used to hunt up in Dayton at Dry Creek Hunting Club, and there was about 10 or 12 of us in there. And, man, we were so hyped up every time. We didn't have no cameras back then. Didn't have no idea, you know.
Right.
We just knew that, you know, we had monster bucks on the property.
And y'all did.
You know, and every year somebody'd kill one or two or three or whatever, you know, and the neighbors was killing them. And I was so fired up back then. I'd take people, friends of mine, hunting up there, and they thought I was crazy. We'd leave the camp at 4:00 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
We would be in the woods in a tree at 4:30. Now, it didn't get daylight at 6 or 6:30.
That's hardcore.
I mean, but I was thinking, I'd get in the woods early, sneak in there, and boy, that big one, he wouldn't know I was there, and he's going to come by.
Yeah.
I was so hard at it, it was unbelievable.
You're talking to a guy who used to sleep in a duck blind all night to make sure he had a good spot in the Mobile 10 Saw Delta, so don't worry.
I think that was Sean Sullivan.
Yeah, that was me. All right, we'll do it all again next week. Good luck to you out there. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/FMTalk106.5 outdoors.